My name is Gianni Russo, a.k.a. Carlo, the infamous son-in-law from The Godfather. I'm now known as the Hollywood Godfather, and this is my story.
Before all of the wins in my portfolio, I was a little boy diagnosed with polio. Experimenting with cures, I tried every one. Felt everything in my right, but my left was numb. Walking with a limp, like will I ever run? Once again, or is this it? Am I forever done? Living in the hospital was never fun. Some people were cool, but not everyone.
Welcome, everybody. It's time for another Hollywood Godfather podcast. And I can't believe after so many years of knowing this guy and hearing about him, I finally spent the weekend. Well, I shouldn't say that. I didn't spend the weekend with him, just him. His wife was there. There's a lot of people. We got to watch what we say in this day and age.
We stick our foot in our mouth a time or two.
But before I introduce our guest for tonight, I want to introduce our West Coast correspondent, Jeannie Raymond. How are you, my love?
Hello, I'm great. Thank you. The sun is finally starting to shine here, so it's a big thumbs up for me.
Anywhere you are, don't let anybody lie to you. All right, so, but no more further ado, Federico, I love you. I've watched you on so many, and we had the time of at the Paisano Con. It was three or four great days, and I was so happy. You were very involved from the beginning. I was too. I think it's so important that we have on. I mean, you know,
it is. Johnny, what a pleasure to be on here with you, man. We have known each other for a long time, and it was really great to spend that weekend, you know, with you and a lot of the other actors on PaisanCon. Yeah, it was an important thing to kind of be a part of, because in the beginning, I really didn't understand what they were doing, you know, the organizers.
And I don't think they did either. But they were young guys, and they got it done.
Yeah. Basically, they said, really, it's something positive for the Italian heritage and culture, and I said, you know what? Let me kind of understand this a little bit more, and it turned out to be great. They did a wonderful job. They put it together in a very short amount of time, and you know, I thought it was pretty well organized, actually. You know,
no, at the end, I thought the same way you did. At first, I had my they contacted me as one of the first people and didn't know them at all. But same as you, I had the enthusiasm because of it's about Italians. We really don't have anything like this in this new medium. Everybody's doing, you know, Thriller Con, that con, the other con.
It's true.
And what's true, though, the Italians are the best cons in the world.
Yeah, there's a double entendre there, I believe.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. And we were actually sitting across from each other. So, you know, a lot of people were kind of interacting with, I saw a lot of people interacting with you that, you know, over the weekend and stuff. It was great, man.
No, it was all good. It was all good. And Jeannie, you should have been there.
I was so jealous. I kept watching Instagram and I could see you guys were a little too busy to entertain me. But I was able to see some stuff later and it looked like a ball. And I'm gonna go back to my married name and come back as Caputo. I'll have to practice.
That's a Napolitan name. Are you from Naples? Your people from Naples?
I don't know. I don't
Caputo,
know.
That's a Napolitan name.
Yeah.
Well, my boys love the fact that they are Italian and they love the Caputo name. So
that's great.
I'm gonna take that name back on so I can join you guys next year.
Well, you know, it's so funny though, Federico. My grandmother's from Naples, so I'm Mezzanola Bidam, that's the Sicilian.
Nice, man. You got the best of both worlds there.
Yeah, I got the Camorra and I got the La Cosa Nostra.
La Cosa Nostra, La Camorra. That's right.
No, it's funny though. But you know what? It was interesting to me. I learned more about you, and then I didn't realize what an artist you are. And even when I asked you for your email, it said easel.
Master easel. Yeah. You know, I think I'm a master, but you know, I love the 17th century and Baroque masters. You know, I'm a collector of Italian, you know, Baroque paintings. Oh, wow. And, you know, I studied that, you know, when I was studying painting in school at the School of Visual Arts. And it was a period, the Baroque period was in the Renaissance, really the Baroque period, 17th century, was something that I really connected to. You know, and I studied also the Dutch painters, you know, and, you know, the French painters of that period. So that's that's why I kind of made that up a long time ago, that name, Master Easel.
But the interesting thing is, I mean, I didn't realize, now I'm learning more, that you actually studied the craft.
Yes. I studied on full scholarship right out of high school at the School of Visual Arts, as I said. I studied painting and media arts, illustration. I illustrated for a number of years. I was doing book covers, editorials. You know, I had an agent that got me work and stuff as an illustrator. But it was my last year. Actually, you know what? I should probably tell you this, that it was an actor that sort of gave me my break in the world of art and illustration. It was George Burns.
Oh, wow.
George Burns, actually, what happened was I was right out of high school. After school, I was working at a place in Patterson. It was just the Patterson News. And I was doing like these pen and ink illustrations there. And one day a reporter comes in and she says, she was very excited. She said, "I'm going to be interviewing George Burns next week." And I turned around. I said to her, "Hey, I love George Burns." And I'm like this 17-year-old kid just doing illustrations. Yeah. And she's like, I said, "Wouldn't it be a great story if like a young artist, you know, did a portrait and we presented it to him?" And she just turned around and left. A few hours later, she came back and said, "Hey, listen, you have 1 week to do that portrait. And we're going to present it to George Burns in New York City at the Plaza Hotel." Well, and that's exactly what happened. And he winds up hooking me up with Frank Goodman, who was the head of publicity at PBS. And I started illustrating even before I got into school to study art.
That's a great story.
That's amazing. And where did that picture end up?
Interestingly enough, a friend of mine who knew that I painted that years and years ago saw he was looking at the news, and they panned across at Sotheby's auction. They panned across certain items that were in George Burns' estate, and one of them was my painting. So it sold through Sotheby's.
Wow, with his estate. Who's the owner of that now? Who owns it now?
I don't know. I don't know who got that. I'm wondering. That would be an interesting thing. You know, later on, I became a celebrity or whatever you want to call it. But,
you're a star.
I just don't look at myself like that. You know, I was just very thankful to people like David Chase and Brad Gray, who took a chance on an unknown. You know, I was knocking around for like 12 years, 10, 12 years before I auditioned for The Sopranos. But, you know, they took a chance on me, and I'm always very, very grateful to them for that, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was it's so funny because he wrote a movie, The Week, for me when they were doing them at Universal, when he was a writer at Universal. And he gave me the script early on to read.
Really?
Before everybody. It was so funny.
What role was he thinking? Was it Tony Soprano?
Yeah, Tony Soprano.
Wow, man.
So he gives it to me, and I read a couple of pages, and I put it aside. And he got to know me well because he wrote a script, a 90-minute movie that we did do called The Dwarf mm-hmm. in the Helium Hat. And it got great ratings. That's when they did those 90-minute movies on Thursday.
Yeah.
And so he calls me. He says, "What did you think of the script?" I said, "I never got past the second page." He said, "Why?" I said, "Well, you know, I was raised by Frank Costello." He said, "I didn't know that." I said, "And the first page, you have Tony Soprano walking down the driveway in his robe. getting his newspaper. He told us what's wrong with that. I said, the next day he'd be dead. And I said, I wish luck. And that's when he had trouble. They were trying to sell it, you know, for a long time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. For like 10 years. He was shopping it for about 10 years, I understand.
And then HBO and Brad Gray, and they all got together. And it's, cinematic history now. I mean, look at television.
Yep.
Done. Well, we saw that even at PaizanCon. I mean,
that's right.
Your whole cast was there. There was 100 years of good behavior on your side of the room.
Yeah. It's funny, man. It's funny. Well, you know what? Can I tell you something, Gianni? It's really nice to see these colleagues. You know what I mean? Because we really did have a great time on the show. We knew there was something special going on during that time. When you kind of like the show finishes and everything, it's like, it's sort of melancholy, but over the years, you know, you get a chance to do like charity events and appearances, right, and signings like we did over the weekend at PaizanCon. So, you know, it's always great to see these guys because it was always a really good feeling on the set with everyone.
You know, it's so funny. I got to know so many of the cast personally. Kathy Moriarty, when she first came out to the West Coast, she came out there with a guy called Richie Palmer. She was dating.
Richie. He owned, didn't he have the pizzeria in Beverly Hills?
He still has the Mulberry Street Pizza.
He still has the Mulberry Street Pizza, yeah.
At 6
he used to go there all the time.
Well, they were my house guests in my house in Beverly Hills. I had this, I have this house there. It's like 10,000 square feet and up on Mulholland Drive. Next to Marlon Brando and Jack Nicholson. See that as neighbors. It's totally insane.
But oh, man, that's crazy.
So I got to know so many people while you were in getting involved in all of this. You know, so it's been a great just experience myself either. Because I'm not an actor. I'm like you. I just got lucky. And then when I invested in The Godfather, and I was 26 and solved some union problems for them, I got the part of Carlo. Nobody cast me but Joe Colombo.
Really?
Oh, that's how I got the part. I never acted before.
Wow. You wouldn't have known. You did a phenomenal job.
Well, I have to compliment Marlon Brando because he was so worried about this. This was his comeback film.
Yeah, right.
And he was trying to get me fired. And he couldn't do that because even Francis told me, said, I didn't hire him either. So with that said, Dick Smith, who did his transition to make him into The Godfather, was 3 hours of makeup. And every thespian, Pacino, Jimmy Caan, everybody was on that set, wanted to go to his dressing room. But they were told to leave him alone. He sent an AD to find me. And I used to go there every day and do lines with him. And he actually came to work the day I did that closing scene with Pacino. Because that was a very difficult scene and never being.
Wow, yeah.
And that's why the scene worked, because he was there. And it was very fun. You being an actor, you could imagine he walks on the set and all the ADs going, because everybody has a number, as you know, in the cast. What's number one doing? Who called in number one? He's not working today. And he didn't he's like, come to help that kid.
I love these stories, man. I mentioned to you that the film, which was what is it called? It was a series actually that they did in the making of The Godfather.
Oh yeah, The Offer.
The Offer, that's right. Yeah. I happen to like it because, you know, you get the chance to see, you know, what was going on and stuff. But there were a lot of things that were not accurate, I understand.
Well, the thing with The Offer basically was that, you know, it was very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm very into law. I beat so many crimes, 23 federal indictments. I had to get into law to learn something. But the thing was, there is a law called defamation per se. Where if you get defamed, and while you're being defamed, you're put into a crime, there's no defense for it. So my grandkids, my sons, I have like, well, I don't know if you know, I have 10 sons and 10 grandsons. So
yes, I know.
No,
you've been
but
a busy boy.
But my little grandson, Graydon, said, Poppy, my friend's mothers are saying you really beat up that girl. And he never saw it yet. He's a little kid. So what are you talking about? He's that offer at a TV show, because I never watched it. So a guy called Barry Slotnick, who was my attorney, who gave me the part in The Godfather, his son Stu Slotnick now is running Interol, running, and you know, it's a major firm in New York. So I asked him to watch it. He called me up salivating the next morning. He's, we got him. I said, what do you mean? He's, we got him in defamation per se. I said, that's how I found out about it. And he called him. I can't disclose the amount because that was part of the settlement.
Sure, sure.
I got more money for the offer than I have 52 years of royalties in The Godfather.
Royalties of The Godfather. Oh, and, man, that is hilarious, man.
And I'm still partners with Paramount and Viacom because I own all the IP. Nobody knows that. I own Genco Olive Oil. I own everything there is in 73 countries. And I just renewed for another 10 years. And their lawyer said to me, that was pretty good work what you did on the offer. I said, I didn't. That was my lawyer.
Hey, did they ever approach you of doing any kind of like a cameo or anything on that?
Oh, no.
No?
The kid that played me in it is a real estate guy now. He was an actor, and the casting person knew him. And the kid called me up and he said, Mr. Russo, I was offered the role to play you in the offer. I said, I don't even know what you're talking about. He said, well, Paramount's doing, you know, there's been a limited series. He said, would you mind if I did it? I said, I don't mind, I'll go ahead and do it. I said, why are you calling me? That's very nice of you. He said, well, I know how crazy you are.
He wants to get on your bad side, Gianni. He's
but the funniest thing, this is about you, not about me. We want to learn more about you and other. I mean, I love the role of he did in The Sopranos because I know, you know, to play
well,
that part like, and being going out with, you know, Tony's wife. That's insane. I've been called that way so many times.
As I mentioned to you, I had been knocking around as an actor for about 10, 12 years. So I was doing a lot of theater in New York City, you know, regional productions, Shakespeare festivals. I did a play. It was A View from the Bridge by Arthur Miller.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I played Marco in that. And, you know,
I knew his ex-wife.
I'm sorry?
I knew his ex-wife, Marilyn.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh, man. So, it was a few years after that play where, I, you know, I had an Italian accent as well in that, that I auditioned for Furio, actually. That was the first year I auditioned for another role, which I knew I wasn't right for. It was Johnny Sack, the New York boss. And Vince Curatola, you know, played that beautifully, you know, that role. The beginning of the second season, I auditioned for that role and got that role. I remember waiting 2.5 weeks after I auditioned.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's the worst thing in our business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because like that.
When you know you killed it, you know what I mean? You know that you fucking aced that role, and all of a sudden it's like it's crickets, you know? And so what I found out later on was that I literally was one of the first guys that was brought in to read for producers and, you know, for David Chase and the director. And they said it was too good to be true. It's like the first guy that comes in, you know what I mean? He's the guy.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They auditioned for 2.5 weeks and, you know, Georgianne Walken kept saying, you're not going to find anybody better than Federico to do this. You know, he's Italian, comes from Napoli, speaks fluent Italian. He's got the, you know, the accent that's believable Italian accent, you know? So after 2.5 weeks, I kept calling, bugging my agent. I was like, hey, Bob, you know, what the hell's going on, man? He goes, I'll tell you, I don't know, Federico. It's still on the breakdowns. They haven't cast it yet.
Right.
So they finally called me back. They said they, you know, he calls me, my agent, and says, they want you to come back and read with James Gandolfini. So went back. I read with Gandolfini, and then they gave me a cold reading right in there. You know that's the worst thing for an actor, because you want to prepare for the stuff. So what, in the cold reading, when they handed me that, I looked at it, and it's the heading was Naples, Italy, Furio, right? And he didn't have a last name at the time. And so they said, you know, I said, could you give me a few minutes? They go, yeah, take your time. So I went outside. There was a lot of Italian that was being spoken in that. And, you know, I kind of made my choices, went back in, and I was doing the scene with Gandolfini. And a few times he kind of broke character and just started laughing, you know, which it really didn't call for a laugh, but he was laughing because I was doing the Italian accent and the Napoli Don, you know. So
he didn't know any Italian. What would he know?
Well, you know what it is? No, he actually, he understood it because his father spoke Italian.
Ah.
But he didn't really speak Italian, you know.
Yeah. I got to know him. Unfortunately, I was in Italy, in Rome, the weekend
outside. Oh, you're kidding me. You were
Well,
you were there. He was
I kept an apartment in the Parco del Principe on the Villa Borghese for years. And I go to Italy every 90 days, you know, so it's
nice.
Well, I got a lot of business over there, so I know. But I felt so bad for the son.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I don't think that kid will ever be right.
Michael, but listen, Michael is doing really well. I mean, he's in a bunch of films and television series, and you know, he's doing well. We're so very proud of him.
Which is good. Oh yeah, I'm glad for him, because you know, that's got to be devastating. You know, I know.
To find your father, you know, like that. That's crazy.
Well, yeah. We all knew it because he was coming to LA an awful lot at the time, and hanging out at the Peninsula Hotel, which I, you know, was there all the time.
That's where we used to go. That's where HBO used to put us up when we were doing the Emmys and the SAG Awards, you know.
And my head office is in the ICM building right next door. So that was my last meeting of the day when I was there all the time. So I used to really get to know the guy. I didn't know the guy, but I knew him, obviously. Everybody knew him, period. And so I mean, it was a shame. But
yeah, he was a beautiful guy, man. That's all I could say. You know, big heart.
That's all I ever heard.
And big heart, giving. You know, he cared about everyone around him. You know, he was a very giving actor. I'm fortunate to have worked with him and to have known him, you know, called him a friend.
And people like that are not in our business, they didn't realize that series, and correct me if I'm wrong, he was the only one that got the big bucks, because everybody was,
Yeah. Well, towards the end, they renegotiated, and he was getting, you know, the biggest pay,
which he deserved. He was sharing.
I'm sorry, what?
I heard he was sharing his money with you.
Yeah, when what happened was, it wasn't actually his quote. That's not what he was sharing. What happened was, he negotiated for a piece of the merchandising, and they didn't give merchandising to anybody. Which the only person who had it early on was Lorraine Bracco. And I remember Joe Pantoliano. Joey Tom. Pants was a trip to work with.
He's nuts.
Yeah. So we were, I think the second year he was on, or something like that, or was it the first year? He wound up on one of the posters, right? And everybody's wondering. I was like, how the hell did he get on the poster? You know, we've been there for a few years. And I said to him, I said, what? How did you do that? He goes, well, Federico, life's not fair. It's negotiated. So that taught me a lot, man.
Oh, yeah, man. That's definitely right. We're going to make a fast commercial break. Don't go anywhere. We know where you live. Corleone Vodka on March 9th was picked as the best vodka for martinis in the world by the Robb Report. by calling 518-713-4050 or 518-220-9463. It could be shipped directly to your house. The finest vodka in the world by Rob Report. All right, we're back, please. Federico, what a pleasure, my man. It's you have such an excitement just being in that series.
Oh, man. Well, you know, the pleasure's all mine, really. Yeah, I was when I first found out about the series, I saw that they had certain people that I knew. I would run into Michael Imperioli in the theater, you know, in the theater circuit. And, you know, I knew Vinny Pastore. We had done a play together. So I saw all these names. I'm like, wow, these guys, this must be a good series, you know? And then when I saw the first episode, I was like, oh, my God. You know, it takes place in New Jersey. I grew up in New Jersey around the life, you know? And not in the life, but around the life.
Yeah, like me. I've never been in that life.
Yeah, so I was, you know, I kind of knew a lot of those characters, you know what I mean? You know, just kind of from a distance. Yeah. And, you know, it was something that I felt I really had something to offer to, you know?
Yeah.
So when I went to my agent, I said, listen, so whatever you have to do, please get me an audition that is not a day player or, you know, an under five. Oh, under five means under five lines for people that are not familiar with that.
Me.
You know, it's just coming in and doing a part and then that's it. You're gone. I said, please, I think this is so important. Early on, I knew this because I had never seen anything like this on television before.
Right.
I mean, the writing, the acting, and then, you know, finally the music at the end was always kind of bringing it all together. You know what I mean? And so I said, listen, you know, if there's anything that is like, you know, just like a small character arc, you know, like two or three episodes, that's what I'm looking for here. And, you know, we held out for it because he kept, you know, sending me things that were just like day player stuff. And I just kept turning it down. Until the right role came up.
Oh. Wow, that's amazing.
That is amazing because it worked out well. You know who we had a few weeks ago is Catherine Narducci.
Oh, my God. Oh, I love Catherine. She's awesome. She's going to be I'm doing a portrait series, right, of large photorealistic black and white portraits, you know, in pencil and charcoal. And so, actually, one of them is right back there. You can see that it's in progress. I don't know. Can
Holy
you see
cow.
It?
Yes.
Yes. So
that's
who's that charcoal? Yeah.
That's charcoal. Yeah.
I know, but who is that?
That's he's an incredible. This guy's a genius. His name is Stuart Pivar, and he was really close friends with Warhol, Andy Warhol, Basquiat. You know. He's a major art collector, a scientist, this guy's a genius. He's 94 years old. You would think that he's like in his 60s. I mean, his brain is so sharp. It's incredible. And he's one of my subjects that's going to be in this exhibition that I'm doing looking at your face now, maybe you can post for me one of these days.
Anytime you want, it'd be my honor. Please.
Oh, cool. Yeah. No, in fact, Catherine is, you know, I just took some photos of her and I convert them into black and white. And then I basically work from an iPad and, you know, I can, because on an iPad, you could make it larger and see the details. And that's what I do. I do really refined details in my work, you know.
That's great. When is that show scheduled?
It's going to be in the fall. And right now we're in early talks with the gallery and, there's several galleries that want to kind of work with me, but I just got to get the best deal.
Oh, cool.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I would love to, please. And if
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm so sorry. I just asked if that was a studio in your home.
This is actually not a studio, but it's a room. It's sort of a guest room, believe it or not. it's a little bit of a storage area. You know, there's my library here. what this is just a portion of my library, you know, and yeah, so my studio is in the other room. I had a studio for many years. I lived in Manhattan on the Upper East for about, I would say, 18 years. And, you know, I decided I was going to build a studio in, you know, in my home, because everything becomes, when you're getting older, everything becomes about time. You know, yeah. There's just not enough time for everything. And so when you're doing,
And commuting and all that, just a waste.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I have great north lighting. So I work from life mainly, except for the series that I'm doing, which is just working right from photos that I take. So, yeah, it's just more convenient. You know, I've been directing since 2006. So that's another thing that I've added to my repertoire. Wow. You know, I did a film, really cool film that was written by Mike Resigliano. And it's still doing well. It's in about 1 million hotel rooms. And it's an independent feature film called The Brooklyn Banker. And, you know, Paul Sorvino is in it. I have some colleagues from The Sopranos. David Provall, John Bianco, Arthur Nescarella did a phenomenal job. And also this wonderful actor who happens to be Henry Fonda's grandson.
Oh, wow.
His name is Troy Garrity. Really underrated actor. This kid is phenomenal. He does an amazing job as the lead in this film.
What's the storyline?
Storyline is a banker that's got this rare gift for memorizing numbers, just like his father. His father was a butcher, so that's what he always thought. But he was actually part of the mob in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and he never knew that. He just never knew that. But he had the same gift, and his father-in-law was this knock-around guy played by the late Paul Sorvino, great actor, and he embroiled him in a scheme to steal money from this boss. But there's a larger kind of scope that he has. He wanted to vie for position to become boss of the area. So it's a really interesting, very layered, very layered kind of storyline. But I'm very proud of it because I had directed a lot of short films, commercials. This was my first feature film. And I've got two or three films right now that are in the works as a director.
That's
great. Is that one out that we can see now?
Yes. You can see it. You can see it on Amazon Prime. And I'm sure you probably find it on some other platforms.
On Amazon Prime. What is it? What's the name?
The Brooklyn Banker. The Brooklyn Banker.
I won't forget that though. Okay.
Yeah. And as an actor, there's a cool film that I did. I shot it in Belgium. I shoot films overseas, just probably like you do as well. And I shot that with a wonderful Italian director by the name of Marco Serafini. And it's called The Toy Gun. And Anthony LaPaglia is in it. John Hannah, the British actor, John Hannah. And the late Julian Sands, you know, poor guy, you know, was hiking in California in the mountains and just never came back. They found his remains seven months later, I believe.
Wow.
But I'm also in the film right now called Cabrini.
I know. That's what I was hearing about.
Yeah. I've got a few scenes in there. Not a big role, you know what I mean? But it was pertinent to the storyline. But I love the script.
It has nothing to do with Mother Cabrini, does it?
It does, yeah. It's about her life. It's about her story and how she helped our people, you know, in the 19th century, in the early 20th century.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, I saw something that you did that I thought sounded fun. Celebrity ghost stories.
Oh, yeah. That was interesting because I was hired to do a painting, and I was looking for a large studio to do it in, and I found a place through some friends in Madison, New Jersey, in this huge mansion that really there were like 30 or 40 rooms in this mansion, and so I rented out this one room upstairs, and there was only like one Catholic priest that lived upstairs, And, you know, my manager at the time calls me up and she says, you know, there's this ghost stories thing. They're doing a celebrity ghost story. You have any ghost story? I said, do I have a ghost story? So I started telling her. She's like freaking out. She doesn't want to. She says, I don't want to hear anymore. She goes, can you mind talking to the producers? I said, nah, you know what? People are going to think I'm crazy, man. I don't want to talk to them. And she goes, well, just let me send you like what they filmed already. And there were some pretty big name stars on there. And I saw that the production value was very high. And so I said, all right, I'll tell them my story. And I told him the story and the guy freaked out. He goes, you know, would you go on camera saying this? I said, yeah, sure. Why not? Let's do it. You know, and I went back to,
and that's out back now. To this.
I'm sorry.
Can you see it? It's out already.
That's Yeah. I'm talking, this is going back. Yeah. This is going back many, many years. I don't know how many years this is. And prior to that, you know, I hadn't been in that place for so many years and I couldn't remember the name of this little girl who had died in that room that I was painting in, or the room right next to where I was painting in. And one night, you know, I was painting late. You know, I was doing this huge painting, you know, this, it was a diptych, which is two paintings that make one painting. And it was a huge landscape and stuff. And so, you know, I would paint at night with the music on and the door was always open, you know, to the studio. And one day I from the corner of my eye, see somebody peeking in, and I looked over and there was, looked like a little girl, you know, she went right back into the hallway. I said, hey, and I go out and I don't see anybody there. And I like kind of freaked out and I just shut the door. Wow. I was like, whoa, what the hell was that? Because it was a huge hallway, you know, it's a big mansion. And somebody just couldn't like escape, you know, that quickly or run away that quickly. And so the next morning I saw the priest that lived upstairs and I said, hey, you know, did you have like somebody over last night? You know, like the relative or anybody? He goes, no, why? What happened? I said, this is going to sound strange, but you didn't have like your niece or anybody? He goes, no, I live here alone and I'm getting up, you know, I get up early to go to, I was asleep. He says, yeah, to do mass, you know? And he goes, why? What happened? I said, it's strange, but maybe my eyes were playing tricks on me, but I saw a little girl peek her head in and then she went back out. And he goes, oh, he goes, so you've met her. I said, who is this? He goes, and so now listen, I have to stop the story there because I couldn't remember. This happened like 10 years prior to me doing this interview, right? And I couldn't remember her name. I couldn't remember the priest's name. I was just, you know, I had to call a few friends. And all of a sudden, I'm with my girlfriend at the time, and Yvonne. So I'm in the car, and there, my phone starts ringing. And an old friend of mine, this girl that I used to see, her name comes on there, and it's Alice. I said, Alice. I said, holy crow, I haven't seen Alice. And so I answer the phone. Alice, what's going on? Hello? Alice.
Dead air.
I said, oh, wow, that's cool. So I hung up. So she probably like butt dialed me, right? So calls me back again. Alice, I open it. Alice, what's going on? You just, hello? Nothing. Dead air. And so I called her back and it went right into her voicemail. I'm like, wow, what the hell's going on here? I finally get in touch with the priest, right? Father Ed Dillon. He passed away recently. I said, Father Ed, I said, you remember when I saw that little girl? I said, what was her name? Alice.
Oh,
I'm like, holy shit. I said, are you kidding me? So I went back to that. This real quick, I went back to that mansion.
Take your time.
I'm sorry? Oh, yeah.
Take your time.
So, we're loving it.
I went back to that mansion and there was all these construction people out there. They were like changing the windows and I went there just to take pictures for this show that I was going to do, this interview. And so I go to the guy comes over to me, goes, "Hey, can I help you?" I said, "Yeah, just would it be okay if I went in and took?" So he goes, "Well, what do you need to do that for?" I said, "Well, I'm an artist. I used to have a studio there. I used to paint there." He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Well, I just want to take a few pictures just to, you know, I'm going to be doing an interview later." So he basically drags it out of me, right? And he goes, "Well, what kind of interview is this?" I said, "Well, it's actually a ghost story interview." He goes, "A ghost story?" He goes, "Don't tell me you saw this little girl." I said, "Wow. Yeah, exactly. That's what I did. I saw this little girl." He goes, this plumber had this huge job to do. And he was in the basement and he saw the girl running back and forth. He said he just quit the job. And it was a huge job. He said, "I can't do this." Because he goes, it freaked him out. So now I go in, right? Now this is the clincher. I go in and I start taking some pictures just to show the producers. I go right after I do the interview. I said, "Here's the iPhone. I just want to show you the pictures of the place. It's kind of creepy." So I'm going through the pictures, which looked like they were clear when I saw them. And they were all out of focus. They were all kind of. And he said to me, he goes, "Oh, that's energy." He says, "You have to look at those pictures carefully. There might be something in there." Well, what do you think I found in there? The girl looking at me like this.
Oh, wow.
She's in the picture. I've got her. It's like a swish. It looks like a swish, but you see her eye.
Still have it?
Yeah, I still have it.
Oh my God. I'll find it for you.
Maybe you guys can put it up. You could see her eye delineated, like, you know, looking at me.
Wow.
I've got chills.
I'm not crazy. And I all I did was give a story of what I saw and what I experienced that night. 3:30 in the morning.
Oh my gosh.
That's wild.
You know, and then Chaz awesome. Calls me up. Chaz saw the interview. He goes, "Federico, it's Chaz." And he goes, That ghost story, you know. I said, "Well, yeah, you know." He goes, he wanted to know if it was legit, and I said, no, these guys, you know, they it's a really high production value, and you know, they just basically tell your story, they reenact certain things." And he had a story as well that happened to him, and I think he went on as well.
Oh, that's
wild. That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that with us. I love that.
So it's a collaboration of celebrities who saw ghosts?
I'm sorry?
Is it a collaboration of celebrities have seen ghosts?
Yes. So it's called Celebrity Ghost Stories.
Well, now I know why.
Yeah, right.
I thought they were
celebrity ghosts.
Yeah.
That is so crazy. The stories were amazing. I watched a few of them and I just thought, holy cow. It's just so wild because you're thinking, okay, you don't want to tell anybody because they'll think you're nuts.
But yeah, exactly.
Did you say there was a priest there that you talked to at first?
Yes, there was a priest by the name of Ed Dillon. I just found out he had passed away, but he was a former New York City cop who became a priest. Go figure.
Oh, boy.
what was that?
From one end of the spectrum to the next.
To the other, exactly. You know, the guy saw it all. But, you know, I could, like, set, it was 10 years that story was kind of buried in the back of my mind. And I just couldn't remember the girl's name. And when I started getting that call from Alice, you know what I mean? Like, I was trying to find the priest so I can get the name of the girl.
Right.
That's freaky, man. That is crazy.
That is wild.
That is wild. What a great story. I love that. Thanks for sharing that with us. That is, I love those things.
That's the last thing I thought I'd be saying here tonight, giving you that ghost story. That's,
What a great way to end it. But what I'd like to do, when you're ready to have your gallery or get settled in on a gallery,
come back
a week or two before and we'll explore.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We'll explore.
Absolutely.
I'd like to be invited myself to come and see.
Well, you might be one of my subjects in there.
That's right.
If you'll pose for me.
What a privilege. I would love it.
I'll see.
No.
Well, that's great, man. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And obviously, we have a new friendship blooming here.
And yes.
As I have a lot of things in the works that I definitely know you'll be in them. But I don't know if you know, I've done 46 motion pictures.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And about 16 of them I produced.
Wow. Man, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I'm in development of one now. I've had some big people, George Gallo, different people come up.
Yeah.
And even Terrence Winter, who did Empire. But I just felt it's my book, which is a bestseller for 3 years. But I'm going to take it to a different level. And I'm going to do it myself and just put up, 30, 40 main and do it. Just have control of it.
Yeah. Well, that's the way to do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I can't thank you enough. And Jeannie's been so excited to meet with you and talk to you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much much of yourself, your artwork and your stories, your career.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
I had the privilege of meeting your wife over the weekend. Lovely lady.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Yvonne is awesome. She's a special person. Absolutely.
Well, you are. So you belong to each other, which is great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, my dining room behind me, I don't know if you could see it.
Yes, I could see it.
Sit 16 people. And I.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, you'll love this place. There's 12 rooms here.
No, wow. Holy crow.
Yeah.
12 rooms.
Yeah. Costello left it to me when he died in 72. I got more luck than brains, believe me.
But that's great.
Why I'm saying that, I'd love to invite you and your wife to come to dinner sometime.
Oh, absolutely. Love to.
All right. With that said, thank you so much.
Yeah, no, thank you, Gianni and Jeannie. Thanks so much. I really, really appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Wonderful, wonderful to be on your show. And I really enjoyed the conversation.
No, that was great. Thank you so
one
much.
One of many times, hopefully for us.
All right. Sounds good. You. Arrivederci.
Arrivederci.
Ciao. Arrivederci. I'm going to learn for the PaisanCon next year.
Here you go.
Yep.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right, Jeannie, so it's time for us to say goodbye. They all know where we're at. And what we need to exploit and tell them and keep telling them, they have to be soliciting, submitting, subscribing.
That's right.
Can you promote us more, please? I want more followers.
I'll do my best. I'm going to start pushing us all over town. But hey, we want you to follow us on Instagram, on Facebook, leave us a comment in all of the different Apple podcasts, all the different podcast places you can come across us. Please share us with a friend. It's the best way for us to get more listeners and more viewers, and we appreciate every one of you. You can also email us directly if you have any questions or show ideas. We'd love to hear them. We'd love to get guests on that you'd like to hear from. And that's at HollywoodGodfatherPodcast.com. You can click on the link that's also in the show. And we'd love to hear from you. So please join in.
All right. Well, everybody have a great week. God bless. We'll see you next Wednesday.
All right. Have a great night, Gianni.
Good night.
That, but I'll be back.
No regrets, no complaints. Lived a life with no restraints. The little kid they all counted out, proved them all wrong, that's without a doubt. Laying there with my left side numb, 5 year bout with polio, but yes, I won. From standing on corners like how many pens you want to living in a bakery, then opening my own restaurant. Of course, I had some help along the way. Friends like Frank Costello that I miss each and every day. Things from many years ago still resonate.